an apology from Pau, which they could not be part of this meeting. They requested that they can avail themselves the other day, including the task team. They are not here. They requested that they might be ready on the 20th. So the only presentation which we thought it would suffice for us to listen to, because that's what we need to understand the progress, and afterwards met with the industry and the department and the fund. We thought it's still relevant for them to come and present without delaying their presentation. But we still give those that have apologized time to come and present. And then the committee can then make a decision from the full presentation. So I'm now going to allow the SAPA to introduce themselves and present their presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to the Honorable Members. Good morning to Minister and the DG, as well as the rest of the DAF officials. What I'm going to do is just to take you through where we are in terms of the poultry industry. Following on the discussions we had last year with regards to the distress that the industry was under, and also there have been some other developments since then. So you will notice that the presentation has a lot more eggs than it did the last time, because we've had, since the outbreak of avian flu, that affected mostly the egg producers. So I'll just introduce the people from SAPA. So myself, my name is Charlotte Nkuna, and I'm the interim CEO. And I brought with me Dr. Zianda Majokweni, who is our director of the Poultry Disease Management Agency, which is an agency that was established by the industry, by SAPA, to actually take care of disease matters. So I'll go through the presentation, and if there are questions, Dr. Majokweni and I will then address them together. So the content of the presentation would look at production in terms of the figures, what it looks like, the pricing, and particularly eggs, because we've had some issues with our broiler figures, so you'll notice that there won't be a lot of broiler figures. But hopefully, in the next time we come around, we're busy now collecting the data from May last year, and we'll touch a little bit on trade and the imports, looking at what's happened in the last year, and then looking at avian flu. We'll discuss avian flu in a little bit more detail. So I'll start with eggs. The laying flock was affected by the avian flu outbreak, and this resulted in the shortage of day-old pullets. So these are the females that are raised to then produce eggs, and this affected quite significantly the smaller producers, because when there was a shortage, then there was no movement in certain areas, and then the producers who normally would not place orders in advance were then not able to get hold of pullets. And looking at the flock, as you can see, from about June last year, the number of hens started declining. And looking at the October 2017 versus 2016, the flock or the hen numbers were down 14.6%, and that had an impact on the number of eggs. So you will notice that the egg numbers reduced quite significantly by as much as 15.7% in terms of the number of cases of eggs that were available to sell, and the production itself by minus 7.1. And that also affected the per capita consumption. We were building quite nicely and very stable between 2014 and 2016, but then last year it dropped the number of eggs that were consumed by each South African. In terms of broiler production, as I mentioned, we had some challenges with the statistics last year, so we are in the process of compiling those for our annual report, which we will be releasing in June. So those figures will not be covered in this presentation. I just want to note as well that the pricing that we present here is a three-month lag. These are historical figures, and this is for competition reasons that we are not able to report on prices as they happen on the day. Looking at retail pricing, or pricing at retail as well as producer level, you will notice that probably everybody would have heard in the news last year that the prices of eggs had increased, and this was basically due to the shortage that was there. And also, if you look at the Western Cape, because the market had to reorganize itself so that the inland producers had to ship eggs down to the Cape, and that made them a bit more expensive because then you added all the costs of getting the eggs down to the province. So that affected the pricing. And you will notice as well that at retail level, the pricing went up as well. And the margin between retail and farm gate is about 60%. So this is based on the large eggs, and this is the size that is from the majority of the eggs that are produced. As I mentioned, there was a reaction to the shortage due to AI, and there was a spike in the price. And you can see that the PPI egg price went up quite significantly. What was good, though, is that the producers, for the first time in a long time, were able to, those who had eggs or those who still had stock, were able to make some money. And this is mainly because the feed prices were better than they were in 2016. So it was actually a good year for feed because of the bumper maize crop, and the soya as well was also quite available. And that decreased the price of feed. But at the same time, the price of eggs went up. So the producers who were fortunate enough to still have eggs were able to make some money. And that was, in a very long time, the first time we had seen that, because most of the time the feed prices exceeded the price realization for the eggs themselves. And as I mentioned, the about 60% of the feed ration is made up of maize. So when the price of maize is good, the price of feed is good. So that gap between the price of when the price of maize was going down while the price of eggs was going up, you can see that difference, and then that is actually quite the result in profitability. So we also we try and benchmark ourselves against the international population and see what's going on there. As you can see, South Africa is ranked around 15th in 12th in out of 15 in the world, and this is in terms of the farm gate price realization as well as retail. As you can see, the feed price is not as high as what you would see in countries like Switzerland and Japan, but also not as low as you would see in countries like Russia and India and also the USA. So basically, we are somewhere in the middle, and last year was a very good year because we were actually at the lower part of the graph in terms of the price of seed and still realizing a good price at retail. As I mentioned, the broiler production, we don't have the figures, so I will not dwell on that. But however, what I would like to cover in terms of broilers is looking at the imports and also the exports, as well as what happened there last year. If you look at the imports of broiler meat, and that's everything. So this includes the bone-in portions, the MDM, which is your mechanically deboned meat, which is what we use for polonies and cold meats. I will see that the amount of imports didn't change much from the year before, where we had 528,000 tons in 2016, and in 2017 it was 523. And this is despite the fact that in the EU, we were not receiving a lot, or hardly any, because of the avian flu that they had. So the imports from the EU were not coming through. So that didn't really stop the flood of imports, so they were coming from other countries. And as you can see, in 2016, Brazil being the one that benefited the most, they moved from 200,000 tons to over 300,000 tons. So that shift just went from the EU to Brazil, as well as there is the EU dropped from 262,000 tons to 76,000 tons. But then at the same time, I will show you the figures for the US because that is, I want to discuss that together with the AGOA agreement. And then for exports, initially, when we first had the break in AI, our neighboring countries, which is where we export most of our products to, had to block the market, the borders, and then did a risk assessment to see what risk the South African products would pose to their own livestock. And most of them opened the markets shortly after that, because after doing the risk assessment, they realized that actually that would still be reasonably safe to import. And for instance, in Namibia, what they asked for was that whatever products that were coming to them should not come from farms that were within 100 kilometer radius of infected farms. So they actually changed their requirements so that they could actually reduce the risk as much as possible. So this is not unusual. That's what we would also do. As soon as the country reports avian flu, then we also do the same. And based on the risk assessment, we will then decide whether it's safe to open or not. So I want to go a little bit into the trade. As you would be aware, the anti-dumping duties for U.S. were due to expire. Then we there was an application that was put through, and after investigations and also the U.S. producers as well as U.S. government not opposing it, the anti-dumping tariffs were maintained. There was a challenge from one of the traders, not from the producers or government, who said that we were practicing unfair trade by having the anti-dumping duties, and also they challenged the AGOA quotas, that it was the limit was unreasonable. But then that was agreed after negotiations and many discussions between governments as well as producers in the two countries. So there was really no basis for that. And together with the DTI, we submitted then a response to the U.S. government responding to that allegation or that challenge. And in terms of the European, the EPA, the application has gone through its waiting for the SACO Council of Ministers to meet. This is because this will affect not only South Africa but all the countries within SACO. There needs to be a response from all the countries, not just from us. So we wait on that to see if we will be able to get better tariffs. But at the moment, we there's still some restrictions based on the avian flu in Europe. So that stays, and we are not getting a lot of imports coming from there. So looking at the bone in imports from the U.S., as you can see with the AGOA, the tonnage limit is 65,000. However, that 77,000 does not, the years don't go from January to December. It goes from 1st of April to the end of March. So you will notice that in March 2017, there was quite an uptake, and that was on the balance of 2016 where there was not a lot of movement. So it skews the 2017 figures so that it looks like there was more than the 65,000 tons that came in. But actually, it just was a takeover from the year before, the surplus that was still there. And because the EU was not selling any product anymore, then that was taken up by the US. And we anticipate that this year, the 2017-2018 year, they will likely use all the available quota. So we suspect that they will take up the 23,000 plus the, for the month, as well as the 6,700 that's left over from some of the previous quotas. So I just touch a little bit on the task team. As you, the members that will be aware, the task team had two broad roles, and those roles were to develop measures that will stabilize the industry. This work, is some of it is done. There's still some to be completed. But this work sits in respective ministries, so there's work that needs to be done at the DTI, there's work that needs to be done at DAF, and so forth. And then also the next point was to develop measures that will revitalize the industry, and this work then is still ongoing. To stabilize the industry, we had to create frameworks that will make exporters have product for South Africa. So for instance, you may be aware that we... the product that comes in bulk, and then it's then reworked into packaging, that, and then after that it's sold locally. And what the request was that the product is packed for South African consumers in the country of origin, because then that takes away the need for people to do speculating, but then they do proper business where you have a proper supplier on the other side and a proper customer this side, and they have a business transaction and they actually pack product for that particular customer. And that will take away things like having products that is packed in one pack from many different countries where you find that it's a product of Brazil or the EU or the US, or having multiple sources, countries of origin. And also to be WTO and treaty compliant, that's something we work on all the time, and we work quite closely with the DTI to stay in line with that. And where there are issues that we think people are being trading unfairly, then we take it up with the DTI. For industry survival, I would say that last year was actually a better year for the poultry for the broiler industry, because the price of feed was low, and because of that, and then the producers were able to make money like the egg producers. However, there were some AI challenges as well, which we'll get into in detail. And then we're looking at reinvestment, so when the market is stable and people know exactly what to expect, and then there's an opportunity to reinvest, and that's something that the industry will be looking at quite seriously. And then to reduce import by at least a half, you would have noticed that they didn't reduce, so this is actually work in progress that we still have to put some time into. Industry growth, food security, job creation, and rural development and transformation. Last year we shared about 1,300 jobs, and this was mainly due to the outbreak of AI. So those farms that were affected actually had to let people go. So I'm going to go into a bit more detail on the avian influenza. So the last report we received was on the 9th of January, and here there were no outbreaks reported from commercial farms. There were still some cases reported in ostriches, and also on the poultry farms that were previously affected, then clean, some one actually got reinfected. So we're not sure yet whether the reinfection came still from the farm or was a reintroduction from outside. The farms are at various stages of clean disposal, cleaning and disinfection. This whole process takes a bit of time because then you have to first compost and test and make sure that the virus is completely dead. And then when you're sure that it's dead, only then can the material be moved, and only then can cleaning and disinfection to get ready for the next batch of chickens start. And there's a whole range of tests that have to be done to make sure that the farm is completely clean before new chickens are introduced. And also looking at the preparation for the 2018 winter season, what we have are that reports that in Asia, they have seen mostly H5N6, and in Europe, they also saw some H5N6 as well as H5N8. However, most of these outbreaks in Europe were in wild birds. So actually, even the OIE doesn't really care a lot about what happens in the wild bird, only that it actually poses a risk for it to be reintroduced into domestic chickens. But we report that just so that everybody can keep track of what strains are circulating. So we don't know what's going to happen this coming winter with H5N6 circulating as well as H5N8 still circulating. In South Africa, we still have H5N8, particularly we've seen it here in the Western Cape in some wild birds, as well as the ostrich farms that are still positive. So whether that will translate into, again, another problem coming winter, we don't know. So we keep the wild bird surveillance, and we keep surveying across the country to make sure that we pick up any risks before they jump over into chickens. So in terms of the breakdown of what happened last year with the outbreaks, there were a total of 120 cases spread across provinces, but you'll notice that most of them were in the Western Cape with 87. And of those 87, 15 were in commercial chickens and 37 in wild birds. This is the number of birds per type. So in terms of the number of cases, the susceptible chickens, the deaths, and those killed. So the difference between the deaths and those killed were that the ones that died from the disease, and the ones that were killed by culling, so to stop the disease from spreading. So there's quite the layers were the most affected. Again, the same in a different format, looking at the cases per province. And then we wanted to understand exactly the economic impacts of the disease, and also moving looking into the future. So we asked the Bureau for Food and Agriculture Policy to do a study for us. The study is almost it's finished. It should be released soon, but when what we did was we sent out questionnaires to all the affected farmers, so those who had positive cases, and then we also sent to some officials of the department as well to get a balanced view. And from what we can see is that in terms of percentages, the Western Cape had 71% of the cases coming from there. And then the Free State was second, and then Mpumalanga third. And then when you look at the value of the loss in rand, the biological loss first, so this is the loss in terms of the value of the chickens that were culled. From the study, they estimate that it's about 307 million rand just on the biological loss. And then when you look at the income for Gone, so this is where you, because the farms are not working, the farm is staying empty for a long time, and there are losses that go backwards. For instance, on a commercial farm, then they lose the egg, the value of the eggs, the value of the chickens themselves, the value of the point of lay, the breeder flocks, those that were affected, the old chicks, and so forth. And the foregone income we estimate to be at 954 million. And this is going to, because it takes quite a bit of time to if, for instance, if you lose the breeders and then you have to replace the breeders, and then it takes 25 weeks before you get the chick that then will then translate into a laying hen and so forth, that period just gets longer and longer. And we think we'll, if we don't have an outbreak this year, we'll probably be back into full capacity maybe towards the end of this year or sometime in the middle of next year. So what have we learned from the last outbreak? What we have realized is that it's very difficult to kill 350,000 chickens in a few days. And the biggest problem with that is that if you're not able to reduce the number of chickens as quickly as possible, then you have a whole lot more shedding, then there's more virus that is in the environment, and therefore the risk of the transfer of the virus from that farm to another farm stays very high. And the fact that in those areas where we were managed, other provinces where we managed to actually contain the virus, like for instance the outbreaks to one farm, even in an environment where there were quite a lot of chickens, was because we had then the private vets and the state vets, and everyone was on board, and there was complete shutdown of those farms, and that the response the first few days or first few hours of the outbreak is absolutely critical, because that is a determinant of how far the virus would spread. Because by the time we pick it up, we know that chances are it could have spread. If we're lucky that they're doing testing and everyone was doing testing quite regularly, then it's possible to then pick it up even if it was just in one house. And we also realize that actually we don't have enough capacity for the laboratories. So, for instance, we struggled with the handling of the samples, and particularly the sequencing of the viruses, so that we actually have the information quickly to see whether the virus spread from one farm to the next or whether it was point introduction for all of them. So that kind of information is important to actually see how we actually manage the virus better. The lack of the compensation policy, we're discussing the guidelines with the department, and there are some discrepancies in what we think should be in the policy and what has been put in the policy. But for us, what's important is that whatever the issues are need to be ironed out before the risk of the next outbreak gets high, because then the whole idea behind compensation is to stop the movement of the disease. And if there is in any way any uncertainty in terms of what people can or cannot expect, then people will behave differently. So, for instance, if one thinks that they will not be able to recover anything from the entire flock, and they isolate the virus in the one house, but the other houses are still clean, one doesn't know what a medium scale to a small scale farmer will do in that sense, because then they don't have the financial backing to be able to repopulate and therefore think of everyone else in the process. So to avoid such behavior that will result in the disease spreading, we have to have certainty in terms of what compensation policy is agreed on, so that that's communicated prior to the outbreak to limit any devastation. And then also what we realized is that our risk assessment capabilities are almost non-existent, and it's does not only affect AI, it affects a whole range of other areas, because for us to be able to have the right resources for the right measures in place, we need to understand where the highest risk for South Africa in agriculture lies, for whether it's in cattle or whether it's in milk, or doesn't matter what it is, but we need to understand where our highest, so that we put most of our risk, the resources where the highest risk is. We had initiated with the NRF to get the risk assessment chair in place, but that didn't go so well because they didn't like the candidate that was put across by the university, and therefore we are still trying to see if there's a way of establishing something, because we cannot carry on without that capabilities in place. It's very crucial. And also our trading partners, actually, it's very valuable for us to be able to have that, because then we can engage with them in terms of what we think is risky and what they perceive to be risky. At the moment, we really don't have the data to back up what we perceive to be low risk or high risk. So what we would recommend then is to, we, as you would be aware, we had asked that we look at an importation policy for hatching eggs, and we worked with the department to put that together, and that was finalized, and there have been some countries, some hatcheries that have been approved to be able to import the eggs. And now we are engaging with those countries for them to be able to give us the guarantees so that we are able to bring the eggs in. So there are one of two things that still need to be ironed out, and I think the Republic of Ireland is the only one at the moment that's approved, but they don't have a lot of breeders, so we are not really able to bring in the eggs from there, and also the breeds that they keep are different from what the South African producers keep for breeds. So that requires different management systems and all of that. So that makes it a bit tricky to import from there. The other two countries we're looking at is the USA and Brazil. And we are closer with the US than we are with Brazil, because there are some guarantees that we would like and that the Brazilians are not yet ready to provide. We would like to have the compensation guidelines finalized prior to the outbreak. We actually think we won't get one, but we'll never know. So we would like to have that finalized before then. Also, if you look at the numbers that we have presented, there was the loss of the chickens themselves, but then in addition to that, there's the cost of composting, the cost of disposal, the cost of cleaning, the cost of disinfection, the cost of the labor that still has to stay on the farms, the cost of the eggs that get thrown away, and all of those consequential losses are not covered in the compensation. So basically, we need to be able to find other ways of supporting the farmers to be able to recover it. The Act 35 does not cover those at all. The Act 35 looks at the compensation to aid in disease control, and that's it. So it doesn't have anything else to do with the business continuity for the producers. So we have engaged with the Land Bank and the IBC. They've been very willing to come on board and also assist. And the Land Bank has already put a scheme together. I think they were going to finalize the scheme with the department and then be able to communicate that out. And what we had asked for them to do is actually to look at farmers who want to reinvest and increase their biosecurity so that they are able to put things in place that will reduce the risk should an outbreak occur again. So those are some of the things that they're looking at. And also to agree on the basic biosecurity measures that need to be in place so that we avoid a situation where there's very low biosecurity, farms get infected, and then the disease spreads without any limits. So the idea would be to increase biosecurity, reduce the risk. We engage the IBC, but of course everybody knows that the IBC only looks at agro-processing, not primary agriculture, so their involvement there was a bit limited, and they would only have been able to come on board if the land bank was not able to assist. We're looking at the disease control programs. One of the tools for disease control is vaccination. We don't have a guideline at the moment. We are not saying that we will vaccinate tomorrow. We're not saying we won't vaccinate, but it's important to actually have a guideline in place so that should we have to go that route, then we are able to do so with some guidance that already exists and not scramble to try and put something together at the last minute. So that has been the focus, to actually put something together that would allow vaccination to occur should we need to go that route. And also there's been research that's been done now on the available vaccines. And, of course, that's looking at H5N8. How it relates to something like H5N6, we don't know. So basically looking at the protection of the vaccines that are available on the market, but that covers only H5N8. But that is the virus we have in the country at the moment. So if we are to get anything, it will likely be that one because it's still in the country. But the chances, the possibilities of others is not completely zero. Again, we are looking to review and improve on emergency response. So we have a meeting planned for the 20th of February where we, staff has invited the provinces. We are going to have laboratory people, the producers, and everyone to look at how we responded to the last outbreak, what we need to have in place. For instance, one of the things we realized was actually a big challenge was the disposal of the chickens, not only the killing, but also the disposal. So there was the burial, there was the incineration, there was a whole lot of other things that were tried, but we really were feeling in the dark because we hadn't had an experience to having to kill that many chickens before, and we were all learning as we were moving along. So it is important for us to actually have a review where we can see what worked, what didn't work, what we need to put in place collectively to be able to respond better should we have another outbreak. And then again, the risk assessment and analysis capabilities. This is very important, and I think it's something we really need to look at ways of putting in place, because if we don't have that, we... really, for instance, we're trying to figure out at the moment whether the virus still being in ostriches, will that cause danger to poultry or not? We don't know. We don't know whether it moves from ostriches back to chickens. We don't know whether there's enough virus that's shed by the ostriches for there to be enough for the wild birds to pick it up, and then we don't have any of those answers. And that work we need to be able to make better decisions. And I think that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. You want to add? Okay, thank you very much. Members can engage with the presentation.
Just two quick questions. Thanks very much for the presentation. Just the first two questions. What is the poultry industry worth? You can spend so many hours. I think it's worth our while to know what it is worth. And have you been able to work out what its contribution is to the GDP? A lighter note before I leave you. Who speaks at the burials? Okay. About the broiler imports. What impact did this figure of 523,400 28 have on the South African role players? Number two, probably this one, Chase, directed more at the department, the task team. When will the Minister for DAF start implementing so as to stabilize the industry? About the impact of losses, how many jobs were lost as a result of this financial loss of 954 million?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Is that it?
Yes.
Oh, I had one more to close with.
No,
it's
not.
Second time.
Honorable Cooper.
Yeah, thank you, Jay.
Your mic?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Jay, and thank you for the presentation. Jay, what worries me is that we only look at the consequences of a disaster like this one at the farmer itself, and we don't look at the consequences for the informal traders, which is a lot in our rural areas, and some of those informal traders, I mean, that is selling boiled eggs is their livelihood. That's how they, you know, that's how they get money to live and send their kids to university and send their kids to school and what have you. And surely it must have a huge influence on this informal sector and informal traders in South Africa. So I would like, I don't know whose job is it. Is it the department's job or whose job is it? But give us some indication on what is the consequences of an outbreak like this will have on the informal trader in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I must also thank the doctor for the presentation. Chair, I have quite a lot of questions, but I will make sure that I start with those ones that I think is more important first. I would like to find out, Chair, if that 900-something million rand includes the cost of cleaning and what, but as far as I could see from the slide, it was actually only the cost of the killing and the loss of the physical that's included in that. If you have to include the cost of disposing, culling, all of that, to what amount will that come to, or is that part of what the report that we are still waiting for will include? Chairperson, if we can't import eggs from another country, how long will it take this industry to then get up to a certain standard again of what where we were before we had to go? Will it take us a year, 2 years, 6 months? How long will it take to get to, and what will that impact be of cost of losses? Because if I understand the almost 1 billion rand loss, it is what, you know, we've lost so far. So have you worked out a time period and, you know, until when we will be up to that certain standard again? And what will be the total loss then by that time if it takes us 2 years or I don't know how many years? So I want to find out how urgent it is that we do get that eggs from whatever other country to get up to speed again. Then, Chairperson, I looked at the slide on the risks and the compensation. I just want to check what is that slide. This one, slide 13. Slow emergency disease response, limited capacity, lack of favorable compensation policy, lack of comprehensive risk assessment. Since the outbreak, has any work
been done to finalize this. And I think maybe also this is to the department, because Minister, last year when I was still fighting with you in Parliament, and it's going to start as soon as we open Parliament again, the answers were constantly, we're working on it, you're going to get it done. Here we sit, it's February, it doesn't seem to me like a lot has happened. So I need to find out if progress has been made. Are we any nearer to finding a solution on the compensation policy or the capacity to monitor the diseases? Because we are discussing bird flu here, but I know there's lots of other diseases out there that's currently a problem. What is that one? Newcastle is up on the rise, or was, that I was told, and others. So what is the capacity, at least, did we move forward with any of these things? The disease response, the capacity, the compensation one, or any of those that we can say there is a movement? And then my last one, Chair, would be, looking at how we are going to get the industry up to speed, one of the things, and that was in bold, is that we are going to halve the imports. How practical is that? Can it be done? Because I know that there are so many things in place. Is it the pie in the sky idea? How practical is it for us to halve imports if that is one of the main battles that we have been having? And it doesn't even help me to ask you, can we start exporting? Because I saw the export losses drop massively, and I want the question to ask is whether that loss in export was only because of the disease outbreak, or there any other challenges in our way that we could not export. I'll stop there for now, Chief. I want to find out if you are aware of any farmers. I'm sure the bigger companies were doing okay during this. But there's many other farmers, one small farmer guys that had 300 chickens and so on, that went bankrupt because of this. And what was done to try and help them?
No, thanks, Chair. Now, Chair, you will recall that last year when we had a meeting with SAPA, they did indicate to us that in a number of provinces, particularly Northwest, KZN, and so on, a number of chicken farms were about to be closed. And when we interacted with the department and provinces, there were interventions from government to ensure that some of those farms don't necessarily close. How far are we? What is the status as we speak? The second question, there is a saying out there which we are told that you agree with it as SAPA, that the consequences of AGOA, amongst others, have created a serious problem for us. A problem which you spoke about briefly on slide 22, that these countries, particularly USA and Brazil and the others, when they bring these chickens to South Africa, they bring these chickens in bulk. And more often than not, some of those chicken pieces have expired. And what we then do in the country is to repackage these chickens. And when you do that, you bring all these pieces from different countries into one package. You don't know which one is which and so on, which is creating serious problems. And the word out there is that as government and parliament, we are not doing anything to regulate this thing, which is creating unnecessary problems in the country. I would want you to comment on that one. The third question is on compensation.
Now, Chair, you will recall that when we interacted with the department again last year, it was that the department has set aside some money for compensation. In your report, you are saying there is no clear policy on compensation and this is creating problems and so on. Are you suggesting to this committee that since last year to date no compensation was done as a result of this unclear policy which exists and so on? And I would also want the department to comment on that one. Now, as it relates to challenges and recommendations that you are making, the first question I would want to pose to yourself is that do you ever meet with the Department of Agriculture? If yes, how often? Have you discussed these issues with them? If yes, is there any progress? And related to that, to the department, you will recall, Chair, that the department, particularly as it relates to these challenges that are raised here, have given us a different picture. So I would want them to comment on what Saba is saying, particularly on challenges and recommendations as made today in this meeting. Thanks, Chair.
Greetings to you, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the Minister, Acting DG, and the entire leadership. Chairperson, I think we met with SAPA last year, and when I'm checking now, it's roughly 8 months. And the SAPA is still processing the compiling production statistics where they've indicated it on slide 13. So my question is how soon can we expect the report? Chair, moving on slide 15, where it relates to the trade. The frozen chicken import from Brazil have gone up by a measure of 100,000, which is a very substantial amount. And it is very possible that this year that number will increase. What now about our local companies who are also dealing with frozen chicken? Were they able to survive or did they have to close shop or retrench? So in short, if so many chicken were imported, what was the effect on the local market? On slide 17, Chair, with regard to our export capacity, our export capacity is very low as compared to the import ratio. What are the causes and how can we improve in the future? The last one, Chair, it's on slide 19, bullet point number 3. Although some EU countries are still under avian influenza trade restrictions, there is still quite some products arriving from Europe. How could product be continually shipped from Europe despite their avian influenza outbreaks? Were their products not banned until further notice? If not so, then we demand an answer. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Fortunately, some of my questions have been covered. But now there's one that was raised by Honorable Kruger, the one which I wanted to ask the impact on the lowest rung in the echelon of the industry. That is, in this case, not only the small-scale producers or business there, but also now the consumers. And also on the impact on these issues that were raised here, that were job creation and rural development and transformation. You'll note here that I remember at some stage when you were around Pietermaritzburg, almost all those units of Rainbow there were written for sale, which tells me that there's a lot that is going to happen to the people who are employed there. Therefore, it means that this impact has to be checked and we evaluate how far this has affected our communities, not only the big industry and the figures of money. I also noticed that the challenges, fortunately, you were able to put these challenges and also state how you think they can be remedied. But furthermore, to me, it would be interesting to know how quick and possible are these going to be resolved. Because if they can only be mentioned, it won't be the case. And now, my last one, but one, would be, is there anything that you feel or you suspect that as Parliament has not been done or we haven't done enough to try and resuscitate this situation? Thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, I was not able to look at the face of the Minister when Honourable Steyn was talking about starting Parliament and not dissolving Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Ndaba, you are out of order. Honourable Mandela, you are out of order.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to remind comrades we have been given a 5-year term mandate, and the 5 years have not expired as yet, so we must not be in a hurry to do so. But Chair,
avoid politics in my meeting because you will not sustain this debate. Yeah,
yes,
let's politics.
Chair, I think some of the questions I wanted to ask, the most burning ones, have been in some ways been asked. The issue of the impact on job losses, both at farm worker level and other industry level in the poultry sector, Chair, what has it been in relation to numbers? Chair, Dr. Nkuna have raised issues of implementation that still reside with a number of ministries. She have in particular indicated there are some also with our own ministry. Now perhaps she could share with us in the presence of our minister what are those issues so that from our side we can play that oversight role in ensuring that indeed it happens sooner. Chair, the last question I wish to ask, she also mentioned the issue of hatchery and the identified island as a possible country where it could be imported from, but raised simultaneously a challenge with island. I'm not quite sure. Does that mean island is no longer an option, Chair? And if island is no longer an option, then what other options are there? But just lastly, Chair, I need a little bit of education, clarification. When she spoke about the importation of frozen, I don't know what you call it, all of them, yes, you know, coming from multiple countries, you know, in one batch, and us here, our industry have to literally repackaging all of that. I don't understand it. I mean, if I am in this sector and I place an order from a business associate in Brazil, then I'm expecting Brazilian products. I do not expect in that same container that comes from Brazil with my shipment that there will be chickens from or products from other countries. I don't know how that particular thing works, Chair, because it indeed constitutes a problem. But again, what are the key things that we need to do as Parliament or as Minister in relation to with regard to regulations that prevents those kind of things from continuing? Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you very much. Hand it over to you.
So, thank you for the questions. Well, I'll try and respond to them. And what I'm going to do is I'll respond to the imports and the commercial bits, and then I'll let Dr. Majogwini respond to the AI question, so that we can just share the responses. So we'll ask the question of what the industry is worth. We are busy compiling our annual report for 2017, but in 2016 the industry was worth in total 46 billion rand. That is a combined for both eggs and broilers. Broilers making up about 38 billion of that. And at the moment, it is the biggest agricultural industry in the country, as well as the biggest item in the supermarket. So it actually makes up the bulk of the supermarket sales. In terms of the imports, there were a few questions, but most of them relating to the impact of imports and why we were still getting imports from EU even though the countries have been closed, as well as why the Brazilian imports had increased. And I think the reason why there was still some imports from the EU, I'll start with that one, even though there was AI, is because the EU is not treated as a country. So each country is treated as an individual country. So for instance, Belgium didn't report AI until very late after the others had, and I think Denmark was still negative. They hadn't reported any AI. So if there is a country that we already have an agreement with for them to export to us, when the others get AI, doesn't automatically close them off. So that's why there would still be imports coming in from those countries, even though most of them would have been closed. Our biggest source used to be the UK and the Netherlands, and those two were closed due to AI. And that's why there has been a significant drop, even though we still have some coming in from the other countries. In terms of the work of the task team, the task team hasn't met in a while now, so I think we have written to Minister Davis for us to start meeting again, but it hasn't met in a while. So, but we remain positive that we will meet. You were talking about the losses to informal. The DTI convened the meeting. Yeah. The losses to informal traders, What we have, we do a survey for the small scale producers on a quarterly basis, and the third quarter survey showed that there was 59% drop from the quarter two of 2017. So most of it being due to AI, and also some of the small scale farmers stop farming in winter because the diseases are higher in winter, and they actually lose a lot of their livestock, so most would prefer to stop. But then because we had a shortage of day-old chicks, those who would then come back on in summer and also in preparation for Christmas were not able to, because there was just not enough chicks to be able to supply them. So those who were not, we think that if we're still busy finalizing the statistics for quarter four, but we think that that drop would have continued to quarter four due basically to the shortage of the pullets for the eggs as well as the day-old chicks for the broiler. I will leave the disposal cost. Dr. Majokunu will cover that. And the length, how long will it take? The indication from the companies that lost breeders is that they will get back into full capacity in around July next year. So 2019 July is when they would be back to full capacity, because they lost breeders, so they have to regenerate all the stocks. And also because the other farms that were due to be depopulated still need to be repopulated. So it's not only to cover those that were depopulated because of the disease, but also to carry on with business and also have enough to stock up the other farms that were not affected. So that's why it takes a bit longer for the cycle to get back to normal. And also getting enough grandparents stock to be able to supply the local breeders. So all of that takes a bit of time. The question, Honorable Stein, about whether imports being halved is a possibility, I think that is going to be very difficult, because we can see that if the one major contributor becomes less, then someone else picks it up. And I think even though one would have thought that the weak rand as well as the losses due, the tariffs being in place for countries like Brazil and all of that would have made the imports lower. However, the prices of chicken went up. So whatever that would have made it unattractive was not there, because they were still able to recover good margins, even though the import tariffs are in place and they were importing at higher prices because of the rand value as well. So the meat is coming at such prices that it really doesn't matter what happens. It's still able to, the profit is still worth the trouble. So I don't know if it's possible to have them. I think it was a target that was set that would then allow the industry to be able to reinvest and also to create the space for the new entrants to be able to also be on the market and be able to thrive, instead of competing with imports and also the large producers locally. So I think the people who will get affected the most are those medium to because then there is no space for them to be able to participate in the market. I think I will let Dr. Majokunu address some of the questions, and then I can finish off with some of the last questions on imports.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. I think the first one was do the figures include the cost of disposal? Yes, there is some inclusion of the cost of disposal, but with the survey, we have not been able to get all of the information that is required.
it's very small percentages. For instance, we had a figure of about 40 million, which we of course know is not the real figure. And that includes, for instance, 10% of that is euthanasia, 20% disposal costs, and so on. It was very clear that this figure actually needs to be reviewed, and for the producers to actually contribute more information regarding this. At the time that we did the survey, they were still calculating some of the costs, and the fact is also that some of them are in those various stages of either disposal, cleaning, and disinfection, so they don't have final figures regarding that. Excuse me. And the next question was, has any work been done to address the challenges regarding the regulatory framework and other issues highlighted as challenges? Most certainly, there has work been done, and we'd like to thank the Minister for his leadership, and of course the DG as well has been quite involved in that. I think the crux of the matter is that there are some fundamentals that we will need to look at. For instance, the minister had promised draft guidelines regarding compensation, which were published. However, the challenge that exists is in the detail. It's in the detail in terms of those guidelines actually meeting the fundamentals that you want them to address. An example, when we put in either incentive schemes or compensation schemes, when it comes to what we term controlled diseases, the whole point of it is to incentivize, one, early detection, number two, early reporting of that. So when you set together a guideline for compensation, it has to talk to that. So for instance, farmers where they've had, say for instance, a couple of houses that were affected, and house number one, you detect the disease, and subsequent to that, house number two and three become infected. Those farmers should be incentivized for having euthanized, particularly the animals that were in house number two and three. So those are some of the nitty-gritties that we're currently reviewing. We've had a meeting with the department with the poultry industry, and we have indicated to them that we will send them comments on the draft guidelines as the industry, and hopefully the comments will be taken heed, and also with the understanding of what it is that compensation wants to address. Coming to what has been done to assist small farmers that are affected, there's a number of support structures that we've put in place. The first one was give them information and have them utilize schemes such as a training layoff scheme, which then allowed that during the time, for instance, that they're cleaning and disinfecting and so on, that their workers do not become retrenched, but they go on to a training program where, one, they can be, for instance, trained on improved biosecurity standards, so that by the time they come back, their skill set has improved and it can actually assist with the farmers. So we certainly made contact with the relevant stakeholders with that and gave that information through for those farmers. The other aspect is relief fund with the land bank. This is unfortunately in the form of loans because we did not have access to grants at that stage. But the relief funding, the program is there, and farmers can take advantage of that. And that information has been given to the farmers. It's now up to individual farmers to actually take advantage of the schemes that are available. Do we meet with the Department of Agriculture? And if so, what is the progress? Most certainly we meet with the Department of Agriculture both on a technical aspect and also to discuss strategic issues as well. I think the challenges that we face around disease control are not simple. They do become complex. And it does require that the role players engage on those issues. So it's not simplistic. The solutions are not simplistic, but it's an area where we continue to engage with the Department of Agriculture, indicating what our views are with regards to some of the issues. We expect that interaction will continue as we move forward. Has progress been made? Yes, on a number of issues. For instance, we shared with you progress that we have made regarding the importation of hatching eggs, which is an important aspect. The only challenge now lies with the exporting countries, where in some of the cases we are unable to get the information that comes through. But again, there's interaction with the department, and we're looking at other ways of ensuring that the exporters assist whoever wants to import those hatching eggs. I think you answered the stats one. Increased export capacity. What can Parliament do in terms of the challenges highlighted? Excuse me. I think the interventions that probably need to come is financing schemes such as a comprehensive compensation scheme. So it would probably be with influencing the relevant cluster and having them understand the role that the industries play, not just the poultry industry, but other industries play within agriculture, and why it is important to have these compensation schemes and to assist, so have them being supported. The next intervention again is a multifactorial intervention, and it goes where there's regulatory work that needs to be done, where you need to bring together different acts, where there's fragmentation of legislation. So those are some of the areas that we would like that when they are highlighted, that perhaps Parliament can assist in terms of putting legislation that is comprehensive around those issues and assist us in terms of managing some of these diseases. And if there's anything, I will check and my colleague can take over. Just one more. I think there was a question of what options are there in terms of importation of hatching eggs and what are the possible countries. We mentioned that we're negotiating with the US. We're also negotiating with Brazil as well in order for the industry to be able to import the hatching eggs from those countries. This is also limited by the companies that would have the stock that is required by industry. So that is why we look at those countries, but we also look at the risk that is posed by the importation, and we work around that as well. I think I'm done for now. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I will try and cover the rest and finish them off. There was a question about the closure of farms and where we are in that regard. We because the price of feed was good, the pressure on the producers was a bit less, in that they were still able to carry on and survive. So there were no farms that were closed for in continuation of the challenges we had the year before. However, we've had those that have had to depopulate and didn't restock, and also those who couldn't stock up because there was an inavailability of stock. So those are, it makes it very difficult to differentiate between what was due to the losses and what was from the imports and what was due to the unavailability of stock. But the farmers who did have stock were able to carry on. And also remembering that 2016 was a very low base, so the results actually look very good, but then it was off a lower base than it was from 2016. and it is appreciated, of course, because then jobs can be kept and then the industry is able to carry on sustaining itself. But then also, when the price of feed changes, the picture will then again become problematic. So I think that those benefits are great when they last, but then they are not sustainable. In terms of the regulatory of repacking, so what happens is when the containers leave, they don't leave with multiple, when it leaves Brazil, it leaves Brazil with Brazilian products. And then it gets to the harbor, the product gets tested, and then it gets moved then to facilities where the product is repacked. And I think that's where the area that we would need to focus on in terms of what happens at repacking. But also, if the product is packed for South African consumers at the right packaging, then there will be no need to repack when it gets here. So I think for us, it will be better if the product is not reworked when it gets here, but rather that it comes ready as it leaves, for instance, our abattoir to get onto the supermarket and things like that, that it comes ready for the market. There was a question about the impact of the Brazilian products on local industry. So as you have seen that the imports in 2016 made up 26% of the total consumption, and that number actually didn't go down in 2017 because we still imported over 500,000 tons. So that is the space that could have been taken up by local producers, but then again, it probably won't be possible to have zero imports, but then rather we would like that the egg prices that allow the local producers to be able to compete. So the, again, the price of feed did help to relieve some of that pressure. In terms of impact on consumers, I think most of the impact would have been that because of the shortage, the prices went up, so of course the consumer would have felt the pinch. But then also, if you look at the spent hens, which is the hard bodies, I don't know, those end-of-lay hens that get sold, we used to produce about 24 million of them a year. And that market was reduced dramatically because of the AI. So there was a shortage, and that whole industry was quite affected because then those traders, which are generally small-scale traders who buy the end-of-lay and they go and sell them in communities, were not able to continue with their business. And then also the producers or the small-scale farmers who sell live chickens, because they don't buy a lot of chicks, and when the chicks are not available, then they probably are not able to get hold of them, and therefore the live market was quite significantly affected. And we calculated that market contributes about 18% of the overall broiler market, so it's quite a significant number that would have been reduced. In terms of transformation and rural development, I think we have been trying to find the best way of actually sustaining the small-scale farmers to come onto the market. But because there has been so many struggles in the past that it was even difficult for your medium size to some of the large-scale farmers, it made it almost impossible for the small ones to survive. So that is something that we look to try and find ways of working around that. But the issue is that if the prices are suppressed in the market, then those guys are not able to, because their input costs are very high by nature of how they function. So it makes it difficult for them to carry on if there are low prices in the market and people are buying cheaper packs of frozen chicken. The island one was the container one I have addressed. I don't know if I've missed any, but I think that's what I had noted. Thank you. Sorry, Chair, there was another about jobs.
So our estimate was that from last year we lost 1,300 jobs, but that is related to AI. So we haven't recalculated what has been lost due to other things, but the AI jobs were 1,300. And that's with the assumption that most of the people who have lost their livestock will restock at some point. So they have kept most of the workers on farm with the anticipation of restocking.
Thank you very much for the response. I'll give now DG to respond on those issues that are linked to the department. Okay, Minister, you cut. But I think what is important, before we come to Minister, you know, I like progress to see where I'm going. We sit in meetings, we took decisions, and I want to see, because one of the things was that that task team and the industry and the department and the farmers was going to save jobs when they left the meeting. So now I hear the story of losing jobs, not at, but I don't get a report on how did we save those jobs. Before that, the incidence of those challenges that we face in terms of diseases. So I didn't get it, but maybe we'll get it even when we're going to meet with other structures. But I thought even the industry could actually indicate in terms of what they see the ground because they are participants, which was going to be very important to this meeting. Minister?
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks for the report from the industry. And the report broadly explains the number of agreements we have reached. And we would like to explain that our interaction with the industry under those trying times at all times have been constructive. I'm sure that the ADG, when he responds to the issue of compensation payments, he would outline what already has been done. And I would like to say this, that some of the areas that have been raised, like the issue of imports vis-a-vis whatever, does not lie in our department. Yes, of course, we have to interact with DTI and raise issues that are affecting the industry broadly in terms of why are certain kinds. But when you have got a shortage, you may not be able to say we will not import from whoever, because food security is about enough products being available, because that also affects the price. What has been an advantage has been that we have the bumper crop production, which in a way cushioned what could have been a severe circumstance if farmers were to buy the feed at the same rate. But one also understands that if farmers could have got that bumper crop and they were producing at the same level, I'm sure the numbers will be showing that they've made more money. And that we appreciate. And my view is that we need to take lessons from this disease. And even look at controls. I think Raguna has mentioned this as they are presenting that controls are about making sure that you cannot unwittingly transfer the disease to the company. Where we not say you control people, but you have to make sure that they're educated. They understand the risk of moving within farms. And I think we should be able to take the fact that some provinces were more severely affected. We need to find maybe answers as to what could have contributed to that. And I agree, as a department, we have been meeting with the association, and we appreciate the constructive debate. Even where we would not see each other, we would always refer issues like vaccinations to the aspects. And in our department, we deploy one of our people we believe is capable, who is the president of the OIE, Dr. Mdisane, because we didn't want to send a junior person to interact and then come back for mandating. But of course, more could be done, because I believe that a disease control cannot be confined to South Africa to the state. It doesn't matter what we do as a country, but as long as our borders are porous, products are brought in, you will still be having, I'm not limiting it to influenza, even to other diseases that are related to. So we need to engage the continent, which is subject countries mostly. So whatever we do as a country can be practiced some as an early detection. I agree, if you are to compensate, you should take into account whether the farmer has taken controls and whether the farmer has reported accordingly. But I've said this before, that we need to look at a possible risk aversion in the form of maybe looking at farmers taking up, maybe government assisting, cushioning measures like insurance, so that when they, of course, small farmers may not be able to acquire, but I think that is a debate we need to get into. As we debate even the issue of how our farmers are exposed to some of these risks compared to their counterparts in Europe, who are highly subsidized by their government. In the Etihotla, these matters were debated, and we are to meet very soon. Maybe before that meeting at ADG, we need to engage the industry so that we can get the input, because the president has made it clear that if we don't cushion and deal with these problems in agriculture, but agriculture has also shown its capability to boost the economy. But of course, we've got all these things that are cropping up. But I'm sure on different issues, the ADG will come with precise answers. I wanted also to outline that our relationship and our working arrangement has been at national, coordinated, properly exchanging views, and that's why I think the question is, will we be ready when winter strike again? I don't think we need to be found at the same rate when this came. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister. A few questions that were left and a few clarifications that I need to give on a few matters. And I'll go according to the questions that were raised. Honorable Sultani asked about the task team and the work that has been done. I would like to indicate that in terms of the work that has been done by the task team, and I heard Dr. Nkune decrying that they haven't met this year. However, there are 26 task lines that are there, 26 tasks that are done by different departments. And these tasks that are being done just needs to be consolidated, because there's work that has been done. Even currently, there's a team from DAF that is in the EU to look at certain aspects that arise from that particular aspect. So I think it's an issue of consolidation instead of just looking at an issue around the meeting. There are 26 tasks, and at each of those at different levels, including the issues that were raised today around the traceability of products that come in, where products have been mixed. There's work that has been done there, so it just needs to be consolidated and Parliament be briefed on those areas. The questions from Honorable Steyn around the capacity to monitor the diseases in South Africa, whether we have been able to move in terms of that capacity. Dr. Nkuna in her intervention raised one issue around risk assessment, to say the department had already given funding to say that we need to beef our own risk assessment outside of the department's confines by having a research chair. We're still just struggling to get the right person who will assist us in terms of that work, so that it's sort of an independent view of what the current risks are there in the country and how do we manage them, because your risk assessment needs to be very holistic, not only dealing with the issues around animal health, but also plant health and food safety aspects. So that's a holistic way that you are looking at it through the NRF. On the capacity in terms of the department, Parliament would recall that we indicated that we had additional money that came from National Treasury, and courtesy of the engagement in this Parliament in terms of the BRRR, that there was money that flowed from National Treasury for the next financial year to deal with only one aspect of a risk management facilitation, which is inspection services. You have got five areas, but this money only comes for inspection services. You still have got to have money for other areas like your assessment, your policy issues, and also laboratory services. But that's money that is worth, because it will assist us in terms of just building up the capacity that government has. On the halving of poultry imports, it's an interesting debate whether we can be able to have the 500,000 tons that come in. The issue here says that in order for you to have that, you have got to ramp up production. Now, we need to be involved in a massification project in terms of dealing with the poultry industry. And if Parliament recalls, the in terms of APAC, poultry is one of those value chains that we need to deal with. But at some stage, we had drought. At some stage, we had to deal with the issues around drought. And I can safely say, and everybody who looks at the financials of all the poultry industry role players, you can see their financials are up, and mainly due to the conducive ways in terms of the feed costs that were very high. So there's work that's currently happening to ensure that we massify on the production aspect. There's an issue that was asked by Honorable Maloy in terms of the interventions from government of buying farms and ensuring that they are sustainable businesses. This project is going well in terms of the different areas, including at Northwest, in terms of buying these farms and ensuring that the work goes on. There's also work that's currently happening to ensure that there are new poultry houses that are being built just to ramp up production. On the traceability aspect, Honorable Maloy, I've just indicated there's work that's currently happening on traceability. But with SAPA being here, traceability aspects are also dealt with in line with the WTO SPS. And whatever that you implement for imports should be implemented for local production. And therefore, that kind of work needs to be done to ensure that you are not accused as a country of not being consistent with the laws of the WTO. The issue on compensation, Honorable Maloy, we will comment on policy provisions. The policy provisions are quite broader. The policy provisions would say, as we go and implement the comprehensive producer development support policy, there needs to be an insertion, and Minister has touched on it, that deals with not only on comprehensive assistance to farmers, but also comprehensive risk management within farmers, including insurance for the farmers, because government cannot sustain all the issues without really cushioning the risk that is there. We have just been told about an opportunity cost of almost 1 billion. If 1 billion goes off the fiscus in terms of looking at compensation, instead of being forward-looking in terms of managing those risks in terms of insurance, the latter in terms of insurance would be taken at any time in terms of options management relating to this matter. The other one was around, Honorable Mapanga asked, what is causing our low exports as a country? I mean, South Africa is a net importer of chicken, and therefore we eat more than we produce, and therefore it would say that we will export less. But this Parliament had also instructed to a greater extent that as we look forward to the way that we deal with poultry, we should also explore ways and means of exporting our white meat in terms of chicken, and that's something that we are involved in just to ramp up the exports that we are having. And I think that would also deal with the issue that Honorable Madela had asked on dealing with the issues around how we ensure that there are multiple countries that dealing with, and Dr. Nkuna has dealt with that. Chair, I think from my side, those were the issues that I thought that we would look at. And in my responses, I'm not taking away from the answers that the task team has got to come back and report in terms of Dr. Mdisani being the representative from the department, that those answers would still follow. These were just at high level the issues that are there. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and Minister.
Thank you very much, DG. Honorable Bukan, we wanted to follow up on Honorable Maloy.
No, I'm covered by the response I got from the DG. It was about the role of the minister. Thank you.
Honorable Maloy.
I just want to be certain about answers. Do we accept expired chicken portions from the countries that I mentioned earlier? Just to be specific. They come frozen, some of them arrive here expired. Do we accept expired chicken pieces? The second one, which is the last one, the DG says it's work in progress, buying or saving those farms that were supposed to be closed. Notice we had work in progress in the pipeline and so on and so forth. It gives us serious problems. Where are we? That's what I want. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Maloy, by the way, the department, they said their report is not ready. So the where are we? I think it will bring, it will come with the report and the task team will be coming to present. And as we deal again with the APP, we'll have to go back to that issue and understand how do we revitalize and the agriculture value chain, because that's when, again, the question will come. But I was just reminding you that the department does not have a report.
Chair, are you saying that what he said? On this question specifically, that they don't have a report, because I did not get that part. Is that what you are saying?
No, they didn't. They don't have a report because they said they would want to present in the next meeting. They didn't bring any report. So I just want to highlight that, because usually we say we can't discuss without the report. They don't have a report. I'm just reminding you.
Yes, Chairperson, I'm also concerned about this, that the report is not ready. I think it's something that we've been discussing for a very, very long time. Even the questions that I was asking about the long-term effects and all of that, you know, we are sitting here discussing something blindly, and I looked at that page and that slide, and that's why I had these questions about halving imports and what. We can discuss here until we are chickens ourselves. The point is, if we don't have a plan on how are we going to assist the poultry industry, we can't discuss halving imports. People must eat, and they eat chicken in our country. And if we can't grow the industry, there is not even a plan on how are we going to get the losses that we have had through the culling and things up till now. I don't know, Chairperson. I will go to the APP and see if we can see anything in there that we can do, but it is not helping us much. Can I ask the department, last time we were also discussing this import from Brazil, and I can't even remember if it was on poultry or it was beef or it was something else, that there was a turnaround, and I don't think it was poultry, it was something else, that there was a project with the produce from Brazil that was stopped to come into the country. I want to know, what is the capacity of our department to test, and it's linking to this question of expired produce, I'm not even talking about expired, it's testing capacity when produce come into this country. What is this capacity to test? I'm informed that we are only testing less than 5% of produce coming into this country. I want to know if that is correct.
DG, can respond.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I'm happy that Honorable Steyn raises the issue around the capacity to inspect at the port of entry, because it also resonates very well with the current debate that is on the table around the meat importers and exporters, who are decrying that the department is actually stifling them by inspecting everything that comes through the port of entry. So the 5% Honorable Steyn would not resonate with the 100% that we are currently doing. What we are doing at ports of entry is that we take samples of consignments that come through, and they are taken in for laboratory testing. And we have got different laboratories that are currently assigned to deal with the issue of the imports that are on the table. To an extent that this measure that you are talking about on imports that come into the country has been taken to court to say that the department is almost doing is doing sampling on a census. Each and every consignment that comes in a container is being taken, and then there's a sample that's taken from that container. And the industry is saying that go for risk-based sampling, look at the risks that are there and sample maybe based on risk to say that because I've not had any problems with consignments from exporter A, I will be able then to say over a long period I will lessen the number of samples that I take from A. And therefore, when it comes to meat and meat products, there is thorough sampling that is being done. The only issue that the department has is in terms of the capacity, but that is not even sacrificing the issue of 100% sampling. And I'll take the Devon Port, for instance, as a case in point on this issue. Yes, in terms of the other consignments that we are having, maybe in the plant environment, you would have sampling that is based on randomization or others. But when it comes to animal products, that issue is a current permeating discussion to say that the department is, for a lack of a better word, is overzealous in terms of the way that we apply risk management. But we are very strong to say that that's part and parcel of risk management that we will implement at this point. The second aspect that is very important is in terms of the meat that comes through, in terms of the meat, whether it's expired or any other way. You know, this issue also maybe would need a debate in a longer term, where we say what are the parameters that are applied in terms of the importation of any product into the country. One, there are expectations in terms of veterinary health, there are expectations in terms of food safety, and there are expectations in terms of human health aspects that are there. And therefore, the meat that comes into the country should be fit for human consumption in terms of the laws that are there from a point of view of human health in terms of the Food Cosmetics and Disinfectant Act. So that area in terms of this, and I've been on record, Honorable Maloy, to say if there are instances where these issues have been raised, the department would need to be informed about it so that we go out and find out the issues, because it also adds to the current debate that we are having that our inspection regime might not be correct. And I'm not going to stand here in front of Parliament and honorable members and say defend that issue. I would like everything that comes in to be investigated and be outlined. But I do not know of any expired product, as I sit here, that come into the country and then is fed into the system. Maybe in terms of the SAPA and looking at their competitors in terms of AIM, you might know, but in terms of my own analysis, I do not. Honorable Maloy, let me just indicate that as and when we appear before the portfolio committee on the feedback, we will also give feedback, comprehensive feedback in terms of the interventions that are there in the poultry industry, including those areas that government has put in money to buy the businesses that are currently in distress. Thank you very much, Chair.
Minister?
Just to also give comfort to the fact that when the first outbreak or the interception was done, we reported to this committee. It was a Brazilian consignment, and we took actions. When we signed the agreement on AGOA, by the way, it was by the three ministries. It was the Ministry of Trade and Industry to deal with the quantum of how much it must have. It was the Department of Health to look at the health issues. It was the Department of Agriculture because of other problems. Why this? It was because there was the issue of salmonella presence within the own country. So the issue of our people's safety in terms of food, we can never, and I would appreciate all the members that you don't wait. Immediately you pick something, be it a rumor or a report, please inform the ADG so that the follow-up is about people's health and the threat to our. But I can assure you, in terms of our capabilities, as the ADG is saying, we believe that we are doing our best.
Honorable
thank you, Chairperson. Maybe if one may make a follow-up on the issue of the meat production or meat consumption or supply of meat through ships coming into South Africa. These days, usually, when one goes into the supermarket, all products have expiry dates. How long does it take for a beef meat or chicken meat coming from overseas countries to South Africa? How long does it take for that to be a suitable stuff to consume? Understanding the time and distance of those imports. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable
Kulu.
I must remind members there is no report from the department. So you are discussing something that is not there. So I'm just reminding you, Honorable Space.
Chairperson, yes. I'm just reminded by something now that the Minister is speaking. The outbreak of Listeriosa. In the beginning it was found that it is coming from a place where poultry was produced, not produced is not the right word, manufacturing, process is the word, factory. It was closed down for a while and then later opened up again. I want to find out from the department how far are they on doing, and that was my question earlier on the testing of produce coming into the country. Well, if the acting DG says we are testing 100%, taking samples of 100% of produce coming in, I'll go and do my own research, but I take that as a correct answer. I want to know from the department what assistance, who are they working with, what task team is set up to look at this outbreak of listeriosis. Because somewhere, you know, something is still in food or in water or in ground or in we don't know what that is still causing trouble. So what is the department part of a task team to assist with that, Chair? And how far are they? Are they winning that battle?
Minister?
Thanks, Chairperson. When listeriosis was reportedly high in some of the provinces, the Minister of Health called the task team, and the ADG was part of that. And I'm sure those who are connected were part. But up to now, I would refute the fact that says it is from food products. Because no proof thereof has been found. Even on the plant that was seen to have been found to have traces of listeriosis, they could not link it to any of the faters so that they can say it is the causant. Because remember, this is more on contamination. So you cannot, it may be water, it may be earth, it may be vegetables. So we need to say that it is a problem that is still being taken care of. Tests have been done by the Department of Health. Our department is participating. I'm sure the industry is. But I would not create a scare that says people should not consume meat, chicken, or pork, or whatever, on the basis of that fear until evidence has been produced. But of course, we need to go beyond that. How do we ensure that our people are made aware that we have to handle food with care, washing our hands, ensure that we don't cause contamination, all those things. And that is a broad issue. And yes, it's a worrying factor, but it has not been proven yet to be from a particular food stuff or from a plant. The plants that have it have been checked to check if such can be traced to a particular fatal, so that we can come to conclude that this is the source. But of course, we need to ensure that working with Vital Health, we improve how then our processing plants are dealt with, MSA. And I'm not contradicting your research as to whether you're, but as a farmer, you know very well that when they slaughtered a sheep and took it to an abattoir, there's a long line that needs to be taken care, and all of us must play our role. And there's a department, I can assure you, we're not presenting this just to appear as well as concerned as anybody to make sure that food safety is one of the key components of the work we do.
I think the debate of food safety we still need to continue with this because there are a lot of outstanding issues that need to sort them out. You remember the issue of the same Department of Health having environmentalist practitioners who has been transferred from health to district, which they are not functional as we speak. And those are the things that we said we need to come back to them. And through that task team, which is led by the Deputy President of Food Security, to strengthen our food safety in the country. The issue of the airport, there is that dock disappear, which is missing at the airport. I don't see it. It's still there, Honorable, or is having some shift. So because that dog has been doing a very good job in the airport. So those are the things that we will have to come back to them, including the communities themselves, how they have been educated in terms of handling food themselves, with the challenge that we are facing with climate change and poisoned environment. So we have to come back to those issues, and the department must be able to lead in terms of providing a strategy and a framework that will help everybody to look to participate, including the users. And you remember there are still the issues, problem of labeling food that you found at the stores. All those things need to be taken care of. So I just want to say that let's not deal with those issues outside the parameters that we have set ourselves, because we might lose them. We don't have to lose anything. Ma'am, you have raised, Doctor, you have raised the hand.
I'm covered here. I think you covered it. And okay. When I spoke about fragmentation, that's one of the areas that we'd really like to get assistance.
So we have noted that one, and we are going to work on them. I think we want to thank the industry for coming to present. But what is important, as we will be having receiving the report from the task team and the FAO, we would need the industry to be part of that discussion. I think the message will be communicated to yourself, so that all of us were moving from particular direction towards coercive direction. So I think that's how we should summarize. We want to thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much. Let's have a 5-minute break so that we allow officials to connect, and then invite the department to come and present